This is a horror actual play. Viewer discretion is advised. The content warning for this episode includes blood, bones, death, familial loss, ghosts, gore, grief, and guns. Jeb, you've been doing your best to ignore it. If you tell yourself it's just a spot in your vision, that's a lot easier than admitting you have a tail. Because it's bigger now, bigger than it's ever been, a black spot right off your periphery, looming, trailing you for years now. Never coming any closer, but never leaving. And now it has come closer, that is. Some decision, some turn of the earth has changed things. And that spot is closer and has more of a shape. And it's right there, every which way you turn and move, always there. It's there now, in this space, as a woman cries over the body of someone she loves. You hear your own voice, as if coming from someone else, cry out. Horses whinny in fright, a carriage begins to tip, crashing to the ground, wood splintering and flying through the air. And people are scurrying everywhere around you as dust billows at first obstructing the scene. Obstructing luck from view. All of a sudden, he's in your arms. His body is bruising already. He coughs, lips sputtering and red flecks flying out, staining his skin and your clothes. As you hold him in the carnage of the street accident.
Can't let you have all the fun.
Don't talk. I'm gonna... Doctor! Doctor!
He squeezes your hand tightly between his.
You're gonna be okay. It's only kind of on your legs and on your well, you know. No, I've seen worse. It's
you can feel your hands in the fabric of your clothes dampening with his blood as it spills between broken ribs that have cut through his skin.
Just keep looking at me, doctor. Someone call the doctor! Please!
You hear shouts around you, other people calling for doctors, something wrong with the carriage driver, the horse has fallen on someone else, and Luck is looking at you. And he says, people need you. People need new names. They need a place to run and hide. You have to continue giving that to them like you gave to me.
And you're gonna keep doing it with me. That was the deal. You stayed here and you were gonna stay here with me now. Not gonna go anywhere. Gonna stay with me.
I didn't mean to break my deal.
That's, you know how things work out here. You make a deal, you gotta keep a deal. And I kept my end of the deal, Luck.
He reaches up and a thumb draws across your cheek.
Alright. I'll stay right here.
And you see a smile on his face, but quickly taken over by a wince as his body tightens in pain. And he does stay there with you in your arms. And you watch as the doctor doesn't come, as the dust begins to settle, as the view of this horrible accident comes more into focus, and Luck's eyes glass over. But deals don't end on death. And before you know it, when the body is still in your arms, there's a prickle on your neck, and there's a presence behind you. But now, that presence that you are feeling is a figure right off of your periphery, and you feel in your heart for this person on the ground in grief.
Abner's gonna take in the scene and then whistle for the sheriff to get his attention and say, "Now what's happened here?"
The sheriff turns towards you upon hearing your voice and your whistle, and there's a roll of his eyes that doesn't fit the situation, and he says,
"Well, I don't really let newcomers into official police business."
"I didn't ask to be let into any official police business. I don't give a damn what police business you're attending to. I want to know what happened here."
"Seeing as this is my purview."
"All right, I'll just stop you right there. Ma'am." And I'll just ignore him, talk to the grieving person.
As you come up and get closer to speak with this woman, you can see that while the skin is like pulled taut, but wrinkled just without any hydration to it anymore, you also notice that that's not the only issue that has come upon this body. You see that the chest of it, the clothes and the fabric has been ripped away in many spots, and you see these long, deep gashes through the skin, ripping it open. But again, it's odd because there isn't any blood seeping from them.
Can I try to identify what may have caused this desiccation?
Yeah, let's roll supernatural.
While Abner is talking to the sheriff and also attempting to talk to this woman, I think Jeb is taking the opportunity to sort of like sneak around and is using his spirit dowsing rod to see if he can pick up any traces. It's like sort of the same vibe as the stuff that was outside the house, but maybe it hasn't all been wiped away.
Okay, also make me a supernatural roll.
That is 3 sixes and a 2 for 20.
An 11.
For the 11, and as you're looking around, the kind of essences that you're picking up here in a bit of a distracted state from the memory that just overtook you. But the essence that you're picking up is this, like, odd greenish fog that has hung around this space. It is only around this body, and it looks a lot less thick than like a morning dew or mist. On a 20, as you examine these marks, it's a little bit hard to tell, simply because a multitude of animals could have done this. Any animal with claws, a large wolf, a bear, and, you know, maybe coyotes would be hanging around in these parts, but the aggression that it has been dealt, and the way that the tears aren't necessarily clean as if swiped once, but more as if clung to and dug harshly through meat and skin, tearing away flesh. Whatever did this was inflicting pain for its own purpose.
Is there any reason to think that a person could have done this?
With that role, absolutely not. I will also say, for Jeb's little investigation here, that green mist is not unfamiliar to you. You've seen it before. You've seen it the majority of the time in the Shade Flats, when there has been a multitude of lost souls and leftover spirits hanging around. It almost gathers where they are. And so the only thing that you can think of in this instance is that there are a lot of ghosts and spirits hanging around here, except that you can't see them. So they can't be here at least anymore.
I think Jeb is gonna, like, attempt to look at the spot in his eye from the side of his eye, and kind of muttered to himself, well, guess my mom was right about not looking too hard at the sun. In the way that it is clear that he is deeply shaken by this, and I think trying to find, if I have a slightly haunted sunspot, is it being affected by the other haunting mists that are around and or affecting each other?
I'm actually going to have you make another supernatural roll for this. I feel like it's a different roll than what it was before.
16.
You didn't have this thought before you came to Temple. And the reason that this thought popped into your mind that these could be connected is because you're in Temple. Which means that the reason that quote-unquote sunspot is becoming more of an issue is Temple.
I'm wondering how much of a read we have on, like, the age of this person and the relationship between the, like, mourning woman and the person who died.
Roll me a social roll.
I got a 21.
It's a little bit hard to tell because of the desiccation of it. It already looks shriveled and different from life. And by the keening of the woman and how she's holding this individual, you gather it's a mother and a son. And the son probably is a little bit younger than you. So late teens, maybe 20. The woman looks up at Abe as he gets closer. And as she looks up, you see fully white eyes, no pupils. And she blinks, and the eyes return to normal human eyes.
I'm gonna try not to react to that,
Actually, make me a social roll.
That is a 17.
I think that in the last 12 hours, you've experienced so much bullshit that it's not that it's not off-putting or scary. It always is, but it's at this point you're like, I have to be anticipating it at every turn. There is so much stress and anxiety in your body about turning a corner and there being something there. Blinking your eyes and something shifting in reality. So you are able to control it, but I'm going to give you a burden.
B was going to go, like, kind of, you know, get, like, in, like, a kind of, like, kneeled, like, little, like a very, like, modest, like, kind of, like, kneeling down to the ground to, like, sit beside the mother and, like, not quite put, like, a hand around her shoulder, but, like, try to kind of just be a comforting presence.
As you do that, the sheriff says, "Now, Maggie, you don't have to let these people come in here. You don't even know them. It's all right to tell them no."
"Oh, I'm sorry. Because I know this is a terrible moment for you. I know we're strangers. And you don't know us. And we don't know you. But definitely willing to help. Because..." And he's going to look to whoever he thinks the nicest person in the group is. And his eyes are going to snap at B. And he's going to look at you with a pleading expression. Of like, what do I say? What do I say to a grieving person? I've never had to do this.
B kind of reaches a hand out to place gently on top of like the woman's like kind of hand or knee or kind of whatever is like easy to just like place a hand. "Because I've experienced one of the greatest losses a person can experience, and I can't say for certain about my companions, but I'd wager a good deal that they have too. And if there's anything we can do to help, that's all we want to do."
She takes in the words that you say, and this is still a recent shock, and it's like she's trying to, it's the, you know, the someone near you dies and then you still have to plan their funeral.
"Well, I think if you could finish what he was trying to do and check on Judith, that would be helpful."
My deepest apologies. We're rather new to town. Could you just tell us who that is? And we'd be more than happy to."
"Judith lives in the house up over on the hill. He was going to check on her, bring her some food, just make sure she was doing all right."
Yeah, B kind of looks up to the rest of the group to kind of gauge how they're feeling about this request.
Jeb gives B a thumbs up.
I think he would appreciate that a lot.
She kind of pulls him closer. And the sheriff says, "Well, whatever did this to him, he's not around now, but we can't keep him out here, so... Maggie, let me carry him back." And he kind of dips down to try to pick up the body of this young boy. Young man.
As he's walking away, carrying this and Maggie staying close beside him, he turns over his shoulder and he says, "This is what the warnings are for. You've seen it. Believe it now." And they walk back into Temple, or into the town of Temple.
Did he have anything he was bringing in particular?
She said he was bringing some provisions, but he wasn't carrying anything.
I would like to scan
you know, taking in that information, look around the area. I want to see if I can figure out, based on any kind of prints left behind. I know there's probably a lot around the scene, but as we go towards the house, I want to look for prints or any kind of sign to indicate whether he was headed up or coming back when this happened.
A few prints on this road, as if people traveled it, though it's not as well traveled as the roads that you all came in on. It's easy enough to pick up, though, that there are no tracks going to where his body was laying. So no footsteps, no claw prints, nothing like that. The body was laying in an unruffled patch of dirt. And the only thing left behind from that now is, like, the mess that his clothes made, the kneeling mother, and the boots of the sheriff.
He was already doing this, but he's gonna do it a little more cognizantly. Gonna start looking up. Because if there's no tracks on the ground, you know, who knows where something might have come from. So we get another direction to watch from.
I think if Jeb sees Abe doing that, I think he's gonna sort of like stump over and point out any of the spectral mist that's still there. Sort of, now, I'm not saying don't look up. I mean, God knows what's up there. But don't happen to notice the spectral... I wouldn't really call it mist, but morass around here.
It starts to dissipate as you explain this to Abe. So Abe can see it, but you both watch it go.
Now, was it just me, or did that seem
cognizant
in a way that is, unsettling?
Yeah, it seemed almost like it didn't want to be seen.
Or like it heard us. You think it's listening? Mm-hmm. I don't like that.
It could very well be listening. Well, you know what? If it's listening, I got something to say. I want to provoke the mist. Whatever's out there, my name is Abner Slade. And unless you want to end up like so many other people, even in death or undeath or whatever the hell you might be, stay the fuck away.
The mist begins to coalesce, and it begins to swirl. And it gets faster and faster until it's whipping up the dirt with it, and it's created this small tornado-like vacuum only around Abner. Jeb, you are watching from the outside of it through this wind and debris and dust. And Abner, while you're in the midst of this tornado, you are in the literal eye of the storm, and it is so quiet. Faces stretching as if through like saran wrap through this mist, and you see mangled eyes, split lips, glassy eyes of all of those who you killed. Backwards from now till the past. But it stops before it gets too hard.
Jeb instinctively just reaches in the middle to try to pull Abner out.
You reach your arm in, you grasp onto Abner's vest, jacket, sleeve, and as you yank, you feel resistance, and you see one of the faces turn and look at you, and it is the face of a woman with the same eyes that Abner has. And she just stares at you for what feels like a really long time, until the mist, that tornado, slams shut into one cylinder, and it goes all the way inside Abner's body, chilling him from the bones out, and disappears there, sucked in.
Travis throws up.
I am going to have to give Abner another burden for that.
Jeb turns to B and says, now, Mixbeef, if you remember the conversation we had about speaking gentle-like to the spirits, I think you should take this as a firm example of what not to do.
He's, like, still, like, kneeled on the ground, is, like, had, like, kind of out of, like, you know, a little, like, pouch that was on her belt, like, taken out some, like, little pressed flowers that, you know, it carries around because the bitch can't pack practically and thinks that this needs to take up space in, you know, my belongings. And was just, like, about to kind of gently lay them down as just, like, a little kind of, like, marking, a little memorial. And then this shit happened. And was still, like, holding them, like, in her hands, kind of, like, staring just, like, at the little, like, you know, kind of pressed dried flowers. Then looks up at Jeb and, like, is processing everything.
I think in the immediate aftermath of that experience, Abner's gonna go through a lot of feelings. Starting to really feel as that, you know, he feels that cold chill run through his body, realizing, having a moment of realization about how frail he is, how thin his bones are, how cold he feels all of a sudden, how loose the skin is on his body, how his heart is beating way too fast now in a way that he hasn't really felt it beat before, and is making him very, very uncomfortable. And he can feel himself trying to get angry as a response. But that, you know, the usual thing, if, you know, someone pushes him or he gets into an issue, he flares up the anger, you know. But it won't come. It just sits there in the middle of his chest, and his eyes swell a bit like he's gonna start crying. But he manages to keep from doing that, and instead just shake. And then he's gonna look at everyone looking at him, and that little bit of anger manages to get through, and he says, no wasting time, let's go.
You shove that all down as far and deep as it can go, except there seems to be less space in your body to hide. And you continue on this path outside of temple, the town limits, up towards this house on a hill. And you travel for a bit. You can see it getting closer, but traveling out here is always slow and steady because it's hot and oppressive, and breathing is like breathing in thick air. But once you get to what could be considered the base of the hill, blood strewn out, scrawled across the dirt and sand of the desert, dragged through, drops here, streaks there, until there's more blood than there is sand, a mass of red, quickly drying brown in the morning sun, right off to the side of the road, almost a mirror image of that body, but 15 minutes away, settling into the earth after pulling out from underneath. Abe, you are staring down at this, but your gun is pointed in your hand, smoking from just having been fired. The creaks of your bones and the aches of your muscles have disappeared because you're 17 again. And the body laying in front of you is all too familiar, all too familial, but still had to die.
So a little bit before his gun was fired, Abe was once again traveling a long, slow journey through a hot desert with air too thick to breathe, sun too hot to handle. While he's young and a lot, you know, better put together than he is now, He's still getting tired because they've been walking for a long time on account of what his brother did in the last town they tried to settle down in. And they were traveling. It was getting hot, getting tiring. He was complaining, begging for water or to take a break. And his brother kept telling him, no, we have to keep moving. You have to listen to me. You can't argue with me. Stop it, Abe. Just stop it. And it just got, you know, heat started getting to him. He started getting to Abe. And they started to argue. His brother got physical. And then it started, you know, just a shove at first. And then they're both in the dirt. And Abe pushes back, punches back. Fists are flying, blood boiling. Two boys who have only ever known anger fighting in the middle of nowhere. Brother manages to grab a rock, but Abe manages to grab his gun. And there's a shot. Rock falls. Body falls. Not dead. Dying. Abe stands up. Second shot.
You look at the boy turned man who taught you how to fight. You look at him and realize you're almost in the same vignette when he stood over your father. A cycle of anger and violence repeating itself. To what end? And even as you understand that this blood had taken you back to your past, to the time that led you to become who you became, you find yourself standing on the road with your brother's body on the ground, able to be seen by all of you.
That can't be right.
There's no words that accompany it, but Travis, having seen so much unneeded death and also unneeded seeings of death like this, Travis's hand lands on Abe's shoulder and turns him around.
Just currently in shock, truly just thrown for a loop. Not yet had a moment to process or try to deal with it. Just looks at you and says, there's another body. Something must be going around.
It's all right. Let the others handle it this time.
Let's sit down.
Yeah. See if I can get Abe a little bit away from here. Find a nice patch of dirt.
You can find a patch of dirt underneath the really not shade that a cacti can offer, that a cactus can offer, but you sit, hats drawn low, to try to block some of the sun.
Think under his hat, just one little streak into his beard.
Is the body recognizable enough for us to make up, especially if we knew Abe?
Jebediah, having known Abe for as long as he has, could make the connection, and knowing Abe younger makes this visage more familiar.
I think B has just sort of fixed her eyes on the body, because the one that we just saw was unnatural. It was attacked by something inhuman. It was drained of blood. It had slashes. It was clearly very strange. But this is a body with just two gunshot wounds. And that's natural. That's human. And it hurts a lot more than the unknown of the last one.
Does anybody do anything to not mess with in that sense, but deal with the body that is laying here? Because it is unnatural in the sense that it appeared from nowhere.
Not interacting with the body itself, but kind of catching a line of thought from the situation we're in, and also seeing the tear on Abe's face, Travis pulls out his handkerchief and offers it to him and says, you mind if we trade? And he'll gesture to the revolver.
Abel wordlessly make that trade.
I'm gonna pop it open. The body was already there, two shots went off, but are the rounds expended from his gun actually?
They are not.
I do think that the if you were to somehow be able to do like a bullet analysis of the body, this is the same gun.
This is the same gun years later.
See, my problem is I don't know nothing about these damn ghosts. But Abe, I know this as well as you do, and I empty out the cylinder. And I show Abe all the shots that are still in there. I'm pretty sure I know who that is from stories you told me when you were drinking too much. But look, you know this. Nothing happened just now. I'm sure you've lived this 1,000 times already. Temple's just being mean to you.
Yeah. Yeah, this place is wrong. I don't like it. I don't like what it thinks it's doing. I'm gonna take my hat off my face. That's not gonna be his body anymore. It's just gonna be a body. We're gonna keep doing what we need to do.
The mists roll across the valley, over the bodies of hundreds of dead, as a large figure rises above the mountains, too large to be anything mortal. Enter Pocket Bard, immersive audio made easy. With an ever-expanding music library, Pocket Bard has made soundscaping for your TTRPG needs seamless and so, so, so very simple. The easy-to-use app provides you with scenes that include ambiance, weather patterns, quick and easy sound effects, as well as backing music with just a touch of a button. Transitioning from town to a long travel journey? Don't worry. A large selection of the music and soundscapes adjust to your adventures, transitioning seamlessly into the next scene. You'll unlock a wide variety of music for all genres of play so that you can weave an incredible tapestry that'll make playing at your table even more memorable than it already was. Check out Pocket Bard at www.pocketbard.app or head to your nearest app store on iOS or Android to access the magic right now.
Have you been wanting to bring your home games to the next level? Maybe you're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the TTRPG loving person in your life. Well, during the Hero Forge Black Friday sale, you can get savings as big as the stories you tell. Maybe you're a DM and you want to gift something physical to your players of their player characters in your campaign. Or maybe you're a player and you want to give the gift of an NPC in the form of a miniature. You can save 20% on physical miniatures and accessories, such as their iconic color plastic miniatures, their new, super cute custom acrylic keychains, or their 3D printed custom dice, as well as 50% on digital miniatures and STL files. The sale ends December 1st, so don't delay! Restrictions apply. Head to heroforge.com/sale for more details.
My dearest listener, have I got a secret for you? Bitterton is an improvised comedy podcast inspired by the stories of Jane Austen that tells the tale of a wealthy family's secrets, scandals, and shenanigans. Lady Bitterton has unwed daughters, nosy neighbors, awful country cousins, and now a body to hide. Will the Bittertons be able to keep their secrets off the pages of Lady Bigwither's gossip sheet? Or will her pen skewer their good name forever? Oh, Bits, what a predicament. Featuring the voices of Katie Maravich, Iffy Waddyway, Carolyn Page, Alex Songsharp, Brian Flaherty, and Cassie Wilson, plus a dance card filled with guest comedians of the very finest quality. But for us to help the seeds of rumor ripen into the juicy plum of scandal, we'll need your help. Bitterton is heading to Kickstarter on June 13th. Go to bitterton.com to pre-save the campaign and help us bring this story to life. Ta-ta for now.
Pardon the interruption, but here's another show we'd think you'd like.
Do you not want to cry with us? You can cry with us. This is a unique experience. I haven't done this in some time.
Cried?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I don't believe I have anything to cry about just now.
Are all of my features Corvid-like again, or...?
All of them but your heart, for now.
Oh, but then my heart is like the size of my body.
Possibly.
Yeah, I'm a little wobbly. It looks like I'm very full.
Those with hearts that big always have to walk carefully.
God damn it.
I don't hate you. Why would you think that I hate you? I've never hated anything. I'm just heartbroken, and I just start openly weeping.
I think this takes me towards winter.
Oh, Pippa! Oh, no!
I do not like this form.
Just let it go, Lala. Just let it go. You continue to wound me.
The Heart is a Dungeon podcast, a TTRPG adventure for heroes and poets. Join us in this series and 26 friends as our fairy circus explores the land.
You can find the links to The Heart is a Dungeon in the episode description. If you want to support the podcast, you can head over to our Patreon. Or, if you're not into monthly subscriptions, but you're liking the episodes, you can go over to our Ko-fi and leave us a tip. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
After poking around, the only thing you guys can think to do to find more answers is to continue on. You make your way, starting up the basin, up this hill, towards the ranch house that someone named Judith presumably resides in. And as you get closer, it almost looks like mile markers, sort of, the closer you get to this house. Just piece of broken fence post, like, shoved into the ground, with some, like, etchings on them that are maybe time stamps or distance, just seemingly random numbers for you. And as you get closer to the house, the exterior is... To say it was the exterior of a hoarder's house would be a bit of an understatement and also misleading, because everything is extremely intentional but it is all so crowded and clustered. There are pieces of broken fence posts lined up in lines at specific intervals leading up to the house. There are things that used to be trash, now sort of turned into sculptures on the outside, maybe in some sort of art installation. It is very reminiscent of those houses that you'll see driving down a highway that are just littered with, like, stone angels in their yard that are overgrown with kudzu and weeds, where you can barely see the house behind all of the stuff there. But there is no greenery to hide the building that is nestled in the center of this collection. It is just your typical two-story ranch house. It is worn by wind and time and the dust that is everywhere in the desert. It looks homey in the sense that it's definitely lived in. There is a wind chime out front that is unnervingly still right now. But out of everything that you've seen so far, despite the weird sculpture garden of trash and the markers and lines outside the front, this is the most normal thing you've come across so far.
Jeb's gonna walk up and sort of step up and take a look at the rest of the group and sort of raise his hand up to the door. And if no one stops him, he's gonna knock three times and say, hello? Anyone home?
You hear the sound of, like, china clinking, as if someone was startled in the middle of a meal or something. And then you hear a shuffling on the other side of the door, and a voice calls through, like, the cracks in the wood and says,
Hello? I'm not due for another visit yet, unless if you're one of those things, and back the fuck up.
Well, I've only been called one of those things a couple of times, so I don't think that's us. If you... Is there any way you may have been mistaken about your visit? Because we've just been sent on an errand of the dead. The boy that was supposed to come out here is dead. Jeb sort of looks at everyone else like, I'm done. I got to the end of talking.
A heavy silence from the other side of the door. And then you hear the sound of a lock sliding open, and then another one turning, and then like a piece of wood being lifted, like it's multiple sort of security measures sort of being undone, and then the door cracks open, and there's still like a couple chains holding it, you know, like how certain doors of hotel rooms have them, so you can kind of look out but not fully open it, and you see half the face of this withered old woman who's about half your height. She's sort of like, you can't tell if she's just short or if she's just like shrunk and hunched over, but she looks up at you and her eyes are startlingly clear. Everyone else that you've met in Temple so far has some sort of fog or distant look to them, but these eyes look to be that of a much younger person set in this face with how alert they are. And she looks up at you, and then her eyes dart over to your friends, and the door closes again, and you hear the sound of these chains being undone one by one.
Ma'am, don't go through all that work again, please. Are you Mrs. Jude? Judith? Judas?
The door swings open now that all the locks have been fully undone, and she looks at you, Travis, and she goes,
well, I've been called a rude ass, but never a Jude ass, although I think that is quite funny.
And then she takes all of you in, and then goes, yeah, this makes about as much sense as anything. Come on in! And then she just turns and walks back into her house.
Jeb, I don't usually like most of the things you say, but I really need you to say something intelligent here. Is this a good idea?
I think Jeb just inclines his head at him and walks inside.
Oh, God. Abe, how are you doing?
Abe is currently thinking about what he could have said to the corpse of his brother, Henry, given that opportunity and failed to, just like he did all those years ago. And then he's off. He's elsewhere.
I'm gonna keep this gun and bullets then and walk inside.
He just drifts inside.
As you guys enter this house, the inside is just as cluttered as the outside. And it looks like there are designated paths, sort of like rabbit trails through all of this junk that this older woman sort of navigates through. There are things hanging from the ceiling, bits of like glass and bone, like rabbit bone. You don't see anything that's obviously human. And other sort of little indicators that as you brush by them, they make like slight sounds as you move through. And the first couple times that you run into one of these like little chimes, you see June sort of glance her head over for a second and then like shake her head and keep moving forward as she leads you towards this dining room. The dining table is also cluttered, but like she shoves some spots that are like in front of the chairs, like towards the middle of the table. Like there are books and papers and figurines. And she gestures for you all to sit and says, I can make tea. I mean, he just brought me some, so I have plenty to share, but I don't, you I know like chamomile, and she points, at B. And then she just, like, goes and starts, like, rummaging through some, like, boxes of, like, and, like, tea tins, and, like, blows some dust off, and just, she starts, like, reaching into, like, seeming, like, random piles of junk and producing, like, a teacup here, a mug there, as she's trying to set this table for you all.
How did you, never mind.
She has you all sit down, and she puts a cup in front of each of you and starts serving you. Jeb, she places two cups in front of you and starts pouring, and then goes to pour hot water into the second one, and then she pauses and looks at you and goes, oh, never mind, I guess, and then takes the second cup and, like, just shoves it in another trash pile somewhere.
Jeb is deeply disturbed. Like, he's fingering some, like, amulets in his pockets, just sort of like rifling through them as a nervous tick, and seeing if any of them react.
Are any of your religious accoutrements, like symbols and things, visible on your person, or are they all like in pockets?
He has the symbol of like of his faith on his belt buckle, the circle wheel, but none of the other ones.
When she's pouring your tea, Travis, she sort of looks at you and goes, oh, there was a gentleman asking about you. He said there was something he had to get from you. I'm sure it doesn't really matter. You'll run into him eventually. And then she just moves on. And she sits down at her own spot at the table. And she sort of, like, she picks up her teacup and she puts it down again. And then she picks it up. She's doing, like, all these different, like, repeated motions, almost like she's trying to make sure that what she has is solid in her hands. And she just says, Dio, he lasted a lot longer than I thought he would. He's Maggie's kid. He's not coming back.
You're already aware?
Well, he said that there was a dead delivery boy, and that's why you came here. So, unless if it's a different dead delivery boy, how many dead delivery boys are out there?
I mean, you did just point out the fact that I have a delivery to make to someone, but I'm a very alive delivery man.
Oh, no, it's not so much a delivery as he's gonna get it. He needs it from you, but there's, you know. And then she just starts drifting her eyes towards Abner, and she pauses, and she goes, oof, and then, like, turns back away again.
I'm terribly sorry if this is rude or abrasive in any manner, but we came to check on you because that's what we were told the delivery boy would have wanted, but you seem to know at least a small deal about us.
Probably small, you'd think so, but, and it's only because I know, but, you know, it all depends on what you're gonna do next.
Bree just kind of tilts her head slightly, but similar to sitting at the table, earlier, the kind of, like, having tea with a group of people is kind of, like, kicking in those reflexive instincts, and so kind of, like, bites its tongue a little bit, sits up a little bit straighter, and just kind of gently takes the cup to her lips.
The tea is stale as hell, and the water was not hot enough to really, so it's just sort of like tepid leaf water.
Jeb starts testing the tea, like he did the water when he first came to Temple. Just like right out in the open, no subtlety. I think he's like dipping different bits of metal in it, and like he puts it in like a little clear bottle and shakes it up and looks at it with some salt.
She catches your eye and she goes, "Oh, don't worry, it's not from the ground. It's rainwater."
Jeb puts down the bottle and like looks at Abner and Travis and says, "All right. Now, I'm not gonna delve too deeply in why you don't seem particularly upset that a young boy has died and or died more. It's unclear about the state of most people in this town, to be honest. Could you perhaps shed more light on why the water from the ground is bad and what's happening? You seem remarkably unaffected, given the rest of the town."
She kind of like cracks a smile and she goes, "I'm wanting to get right down to it, eh? You don't even want to have biscuits first? They do have mold on them. I haven't had time to make a fresh batch with my new ingredients, so that is fair." And then she sort of like stares off into space for a moment and then comes back and she goes, "You want to know about the water?"
"Yes."
"Well, it's quite simple, really. It's sick. Like the rest of this place."
"In what, pray tell, is the illness?"
She takes a deep breath. "The earth in Temple is hungry. But if you have too much to eat, things start to rot and fester. And unless if you manage to keep away from the infection yourself, it will claim you too."
"So the whole town is just rotten."
She just smiles. She goes, "Yeah, not in like a fun kimchi way, like in a really gross like pustule way.
Like a bloated vulture out in the sun."
"That's doubly gross because those also eat dead things. I like your metaphors, Sonny."
"Yeah, you can imagine the bits of what they ate previously also in their stomachs."
"Okay, we are in the middle of tea. We don't gotta really get into all that now."
Why is everything sick?"
I don't know if it always was, you know? It might have just been a bad spot, but I've found that as long as I am caught in Temple's orbit, but as long as I stay out here, it won't reach me, but it won't let me leave either. So I've just been sort of here, bored out of my gourd for how many lifetimes now? I can't quite recall. It's been at least one, two, at least a few, I think. But I mean, you're not here now too, though, so I've got more company. And especially if Dio's no longer gonna be bringing me my groceries, I suppose You all will manage to help with that until, of course, you get inevitably taken as well. But, you know, it's just how things go.
Horrific implications aside, is being caught in Temple's orbit what makes you see so clearly?
It's the fact that I stayed out of its grasp entirely. And she points out into the road where there are those markers. You folks, I'm so sorry, are already a bit too caught in its web, but I've managed to figure out how far I can step outside my front door and have decided that it's just not fucking worth it. So, you'll be able to come back here, you know, for whenever you need a break, but it's gonna be hard for you to stay. I've tried to get people to stay before. I'm sure you understand. It's hard to get people to stay. And she looks directly at you, Jeb.
Jeb looks away.
Sometimes they just go.
Are you saying that this town has people under a spell of some kind? Or...
a spell, a trap, whatever it is, people come in and they don't leave. Not really. Not unless it's in the permanent sense, but even then, there's echoes after a while.
Do you have any sense of, you know, every infection has its center of origin, and any place we could, you know, lance this wound, boil out the blister, so to speak.
Throw a Molotov cocktail on it and make sure it never comes back?
Well, you know, I did not say that.
It's cauterizing. I'm just less eloquent.
I mean, I have a few theories of my own, but, it's quite dangerous, and I don't know if my heart can take talking about it without some sort of recompense on your part. And then she looks directly down at your belt buckle and then back up at you again.
Jeb says, I don't know exactly what you're implying here. I don't really go in for that.
You like metal, don't you, man?
Oh!
And she gestures to her house. I like trinkets.
Oh, trinkets.
I can make you a trinket.
No, I want that. That right there. Keeping your trousers up. I don't have that one yet. I want it.
The iron wheel, the symbol of my faith, the one thing I have sworn to carry with me always.
Ha! Your faith! That's so funny. Yes, I want that one. I don't have it yet.
Now, I feel like I was prepared because, you know, I am prepared to risk all in the service of my service, but, I'm now a little more confused about the metaphysical implications of handing over my faith to you, which I feel like was somewhat implied in that conversation.
Oh, no, I'm not looking to be converted or nothing, or nor convert you to something else. I just think it's slightly different than the last one that I got, and I wanted to make sure I fill out my collection. It's got a couple of doodads on it that weren't there last time.
I want Jeb to make a social check. You gotta be above a 15.
I'm rolling with 3 dice here. Almost 12.
As you're studying Judith as she's talking to you, she is communicating on a level that you're not quite tuned into. But she said that she has other symbols of your faith? Is that what she was saying?
Now, you said you already got one like this. Like, it's kind of all the same. You know, there's sort of standard issue aside from the wear and tear on it. So have others come here as well?
Yeah, sure. Standard issue. Same thing. Of course. there have been lots that have come through here. I've met someone that I thought was you a few times, but it wasn't, obviously, because you're here now. Although I do remember you from before, but of course that's not possible. However, it is just a belt buckle. I'm sure that if your faith is so flimsy that it could be destroyed just by leaving some trinket behind, it might not be, you know, the most solid thing to begin with, but I do have valuable information I believe that would help you and a couple of these other folks. Depending on how much they want to be helped, honestly. Ooh, yikes. But it's up to you.
Jeb's gonna look at everyone else and say, well, I of course am willing to forego, you know, these mortal remnants, as it were, if it's necessary for us to get out of here and this information to save the town. I would just like to register that something is strange here. Travis, do you still have that pocket watch on you? Has anything changed since we've come here? Because time has already been a little bit weird, and I'm a, you know, a linear person, and so this is a bit beyond even my ken.
The hands on the watch are moving again, but they have just picked up from where they stopped before, so it's working, but it's not the correct time.
Yeah, this ain't right, but it's working. It might be because we're in here now, because we're not in the orbit, or we're in the orbit,
not in the storm proper.
Jeb's gonna take off his belt buckle and sort of hand it over, but watching.
Hold on, Jeb.
Takes it back immediately.
Jeb, let me take a look at that first for you.
All right, and hands it over.
Let me take a look at this here right quick, and I feel bad that you're having to give away your thing, so let me just take a look. Maybe I can make you a new one back at the cart. And, I'd like to use my Genesis action to study how to make this belt buckle again.
You get to roll 6d6.
21.
We'll give you a plot point. As you're studying this belt buckle, it is made of leather and metal. It's good craftsmanship. It is a symbol of Jeb's faith. But why anyone would have interest in it specifically, you're unsure. Simply because the symbol of Jeb's faith isn't necessarily something that's out of the norm. Like, it's not weird. It's a wheel. It's could be easily mistaken for just another design. But in the very middle of said wheel, you notice that it's not, like, the circle that's set in isn't fully circular. It's a little squished. It's a little more eye-like.
Well, that must be a design flaw. Here you go, ma'am.
As Judith takes it, like, you see her nails are, like, long and cracked, but her hands are otherwise clean. She, like I described before, is, like, a smaller woman, but it's hard to tell exactly how old she is. She could be 60 or 160. Like, it's her physical presence and her body language and her voice are all sort of meshing together in, like, a very weird way. But she takes it and then, like, glances over at a door that's down the hall and she goes, I'll put this away later, and puts it in her pocket. Now, you wanted to know, what was it again?
Where'd this sickness start for the town?
And how do we stop it? Preferably.
You can't. So I think it's always been there, but I think it got worse when they started digging into the earth. There's a there's silver in these hills, and I think it was a vein of some sort, and it angered the heartbeat of Temple for them to dig so deep. Something certainly out there getting its revenge, retaking its own share of blood. That's why you don't go out at night. As for how to defeat it or make it better, you don't. You just try to live as long as you can and pray your death is a peaceful one. You know about that. And she turns to you, Abe.
Gonna glower at her and say, despite what you might believe, I can't just stay here for the rest of my days. I got business to take care of. Ways away from here. And I think I know where that vein might be. So, if you have nothing more to take or offer, I think we might as well mosey on down there and see what we might can't. I don't know. Do something about.
Her lip, like, quirks up a little bit as you're talking. She goes, I love when people still have hope. I think it really does warm my heart in a way that is quite rare in my age, especially coming from someone like you. I appreciate that. Thank you. If you're looking for more things to give you hope, I might have some other information in my collection that you would maybe like to peruse and get little hints and tricks and things that make you go a little longer and get your hopes up even further, but that's also quite dangerous, as we know. You're also welcome to stay here, you know, for as long as you can. This is a relatively safe spot. Of course, you're gonna get pulled back in the temple eventually, that's just how it goes, but I always enjoy some company.
Amber just looks increasingly annoyed as she talks.
I think as Jeb sees that, he's gonna stand up and say, no, I mean, I think if we could be provisioned with some water, I'm just gonna go stretch my legs, and find the privy. Is it over that way? And just start, like, walking as if looking for a bathroom toward that room that she was looking at. And just do the thing of like, oh, I'm just gonna go over that way. I'm just walking that way. Over the door.
A social would be a sneaky sort of deception.
I think Jeb would also cast a meaningful and or pleading glance at anyone at the table who would help him with this.
Now, I gotta ask, ma'am, What are these foreshadows you have? Just asking to, like, get the distraction going. It's like, what are these foreshadows you have for us? I got a 6 and a 5 for you.
A 6 and a 5. Okay, great. That means 11, 14.
Judith sort of, like, sees you looking for a bathroom. She goes, oh, there's a bucket and a spade back in the corner. Make sure if it's a dookie, you just put it, just toss it over the back fence if you don't want to go out and bury it. But otherwise, just
right.
Bucket. Just
yeah, perfect. Bucket right, I'm gonna go right over there. Does not. Continues to door.
She doesn't seem to see you. Either that or she does not care. You're not quite sure. She turns back to you, Travis. And she goes, foreshadows. Well, you guys had 5 coming in here, at least so I thought. But then I realized there were only 4. Is that what you mean?
I mean, I did notice how you gave Abner an extra cup. He have an extra shadow hanging over him when we walked in?
Oh, no, he's just a bit unlucky.
Travis is really trying to find a place to hold, because Jeb was like, I'm gonna leave when one of our camp companions is fully mentally unstable, and I have no idea how B is right now.
It's just a good thing that Abner does not have his gun.
That's exactly why I kept...
He's like, he has, like, his hand on his hip. And she's like, She keeps talking.
In a little bit of frustration, B kind of sets the teacup back down with, like, slightly too hard. Not that, like, it would offend anyone in present company, but like a, you know, back out east, that would be a scandal. And kind of sets it down with like a kind of like firm, not quite confidence, but just like a firmness. So you speak in a riddle-like fashion. You're giving us information, but it's not quite complete. But you seem to know many things. Why? How? Just... What are you?
I... Judith, it's nice to meet you, B.
What? See that right there. I never introduced myself, and you knew what kind of tea I liked, and you're giving all these weird little looks and extra cups and all these things, but you can't even make a proper cup of tea.
Well, I watch, but it's sometimes it all gets... You know watch when what? You have a big old bowl of soup, and you fill it up to the brim, and as you're walking with the soup, little bits might start falling out, but it's still... You can still tell what's in there for the most part, even if you lose a little bit.
I can't say I've ever cooked my own soup.
That sounds about right. Oh, I know why you're frustrated with me. I forgot to give... Hold on. And she sort of, like, stands up and goes back towards the entrance and sort of, like, reaches her hand in another one of those trash piles and pulls something out and comes back to you. I forgot to give this to you when you first got here. My apologies. Here, this'll help. And she hands you a towel.
Is it like clean? Is it like kind of tattered? What's up with this towel?
It's a clean towel. It looks kind of like a tea towel almost. There's like some embroidery on it. It's old and frayed, but there's not like stains or anything stinky on it. It's just like a small like hand towel.
Do I like recognize it all, or just like it's like a nice like little?
It's just a nice little towel.
I'm once again terribly sorry. I don't. This doesn't help. At least,
oh,
not right now.
Oh, okay, so it will.
I'm sure.
Oh, well, good. See, now we're all peachy keen again. All
right.
I want Linny to roll a physical. See if Jeb can get into the room without Judith acknowledging it.
Yeah, that's a 3.
Judith can't even sneak around her own house. It is so old that it almost breathes and moves like it's alive. And so when that door opens, it's like a... Like, the whole thing, like, explodes within the door frame of just wood creaking against wood.
Wrong door. Sorry.
Judith is suddenly right next to you.
I'm just gonna keep walking. Just keep walking. Like... Jeb's not stopping.
She reaches out to like grab the back of your tunic and she's like, no, no, Sonny. Curiosity is not a bad thing. It could get you killed, but, you know, only if you're a cat. Or, I think that's how it goes. Why do cats have such bad luck? Anyway. If you're curious, Jebediah, feel free to look around.
Jebediah is definitely doing that thing of... Like, she's startled him, and his instinct is actually, yes, to just run. So he's going through the door. And then he's going through the door, and as he's going through the door, the realization that this is probably a bad idea is happening simultaneously, but he is now through the door. And he sort of just, like, shrugs her off and says, well, it's fortunate that I'm not a cat. And I think he's looking specifically for, like, replica belt buckles, essentially. Like, that is the thing he's thinking about. He's trying to find who else was here. Because, like, the wheel is the same, but, you know, sometimes people will carve into it, and time and age will wear it down to be distinct.
You walk into a room, or... You fall in, you find yourself in. That if we were in our present modern day, would be the most Americana-esque place that you walked into. But being where we are, the symbolism is different. It's a room with closed curtains, the drapes pulled. It's the only room in the place that's not cluttered. There are shelves on the wall. There are pedestals across the floor. There are hooks with hanging prints. Judith is keeping a museum inside of her house. A collection of what she called trinkets, but that all have a very specific purpose or origin. You see a couple belt buckles taken off from the belts themselves. Wheels, sure. There's a lot of eyes on you in this room. There's a lot of eyes on you, eyes being held by two curving hands. Let me have you do supernatural. Let me have you do supernatural.
9.
You see, like, the passage of time in a timeline, and you watch these symbols shift and change and take new forms. And as you look around the room, you see an eye being held by hands turn into a wheel.
Jeb would be somewhat learned in the history of his faith, and this is something that he's never run into before. The teachings of his faith are very sort of, there is no end, there is only the middle, and everything is always the middle. It is a wheel that turns on. And so the idea that is fundamentally untrue is making it hard for him to figure out exactly what this means. I think he's going to, in sort of that same instinct to escape, is going to throw open all of the window blinds in the room and attempt to let some light in, and then start examining the earliest items as much as he possibly can.
The other three are see her watch through the crack in the door a second, and she sort of just like nods and then just turns back towards the table and says, he'll probably be a minute. The breakdowns usually last between, I'd say, like 15 minutes to an hour, depending on like how entrenched in the noggins they are, from my experience at least. I could make some cookies if you want. I've got the flour I just got delivered. No sugar this go around. I haven't had sugar in a while. Did you have any sugar?
I'd prefer that my acquaintance didn't have a breakdown of any sort. Are you just allowing this to happen?
Oh, I'm not gonna get involved. You don't get between a man and his faith, especially when it's crumbling around him. That's a messy, messy place to be.
Well, I wouldn't. Cookies sound great.
Excellent! Excellent! And then she sort of, like, goes up to Travis, and she says, all right, now I'm gonna need your help real quick. Kneading dough, it ain't as easy as it used to be. And she just grabs Travis's arm and starts, like, hauling him towards the kitchen, leaving B and Abe at the table with one another.
When she's gone, Abe's gonna look at B. It's like, look it up and down and say, you're pissed, ain't you?
No, of course not.
You can tell me if you're pissed. I won't hold it against you.
Lady never tells.
you're smiling the way that people smile when they don't want people to know they're angry. It's fine. I get angry all the time.
I can tell.
I don't know why that hurt.
You just...
No, it's... I mean... It's
you
honest.
Have that way about you.
Yeah. So, What do you think she's after?
I don't know if she seems like she's after much. Seems like she's just been around a while and is grappling with it. I don't think anyone's meant to stay around all that long.
It's a bit horrific thing to tell an old man.
Oh, well, that's... It would be nice if we all had a little more time, but at some point, it's all gotta end, right? I mean, if I've learned one thing since coming out here, it's that.
Yeah, this place isn't kind to people who want to live a long time. The only way to live a long time is to not be kind. At least in my experience. But I mean, Jebediah manages it, and not the worst asshole I've ever met. So.
Well.
Although I guess those assholes didn't live long either.
I think I've made my peace with not living a long time. I'd rather be kind.
Abner bites his tongue. And just nods instead of saying what he was going to say.
Why are you out here? It's not your space to be. I know Jebediah. I know you're trying to get him to tell you anything useful. But I mean, just wanting to know something ain't reason enough. If you just wanted to know something, you could read a book. I'm sure you got books where you come from.
Plenty.
Yeah, so why are you gonna come out here?
It's a bit of a story. Not one I'm fond of telling. But I guess the short of it is that I have a problem and I don't quite know how to fix it. And I thought that Jebediah would know how. And his advice was to just kind of let it happen and be nice to them.
You see, the mistake you made, the Jebediah is not a problem solver.
I'm learning that rather quickly.
Now, I'm a problem solver.
Like you solved that problem back there?
What part are you referring to? Little miss.
To be blunt, the dead man with the gunshot wounds. I can't quite put my finger on why, but Jeb and Travis certainly had a reaction, something I didn't catch. You knew him?
I knew him better than anyone ever knew him.
And I think that kind of is the moment that it clicks. And in kind of a, I don't quite know what to say, kind of a reinforcing that I'm trying to be kind, and a little bit of a, I've been too just like chill today and something's gotta give, B just says, it's okay. I think I killed my brother too.
Jeb is in this room that should be called a museum, going through these things that are related in some way to the faith that he has lived and breathed and taught. And at one point, looking for some of the older relics here, finds sets on one of the shelves what could only be described as a sawed-off part of a door frame. Wooden. With something carved inside, almost like you would chisel stone, but carved into wood. And as You run your hand over that, your fingers indenting into this eye. You touched another door frame when you first walked into temple. And your fingers find the exact same grooves that they found in that. An eye on you since you stepped foot in town. That was Kenzie Tartaglioni and Ashley Westover as your GMs, Riley Manis as Travis Black, Stevie Fay as Beatrice Leibowitz, Brendan Hooker as Abner Slade, and Linny Shell as Jebediah Monroe. You can find out where to follow the cast as well as their own projects in the episode description. If you liked the episode, we'd love to hear from you, so leave us a rating and/or a review. We appreciate you listening. And a special thank you to Scriv the Bard, the writer of this wonderful system, Bard RPG,